No, I didn't.
And I assume no one's dialing in, is that right? So we're just using an expensive tape recorder. So this is on the topic of differentiation of field edge, and what we're trying to converge on is some definitions that we get supermajority support for. So I think we currently we have a definition around confusingly similar. Using the trademark approach, which is confusingly similar, means there is a likelihood of confusion on the part of the relevant public. And examples there are things like .com or .c0m for com. Now we're talking about saying, do we want to broaden that some more? And the sorts of areas you could broaden it to is semantically. You could basically say that a TLD that means the same thing in another language isn't allowed, or you could say a TLD that uses another set of scripts that means a different script that means the same thing wouldn't be allowed, or you could differentiate it based on purpose, which is kind of the current wording, and so you might have two TLDs, one's XYZ and one's IJK, neither of which have any particular meaning from the string, but they're both for the purpose of sport. So you might say, okay, well, if XYZ was created for sporting entities and someone decides to create IJK for sporting entities, would we allow? So those are just sort of examples just to focus the discussion. Now, Chuck had suggested that we review the goals around differentiation and see if we can get agreement on those first. So I think that's a reasonable next step. So do you want to go ahead, Chuck? Suggest what you think the goals of differentiation are?
Sure. I'll throw out the ones that I had jotted down. Some I've actually added during this session, just in the sessions gone. I think one that everybody seems to be zeroing in already is minimize user confusion. One that hasn't been talked about here, but that has been, certainly we, I think, talked a little about this before, is minimizing brand dilution for TLDs. Okay. A third one would be provide diverse choices for registrants. Diversification actually is a very good thing in a competitive environment, so there are real meaningful choices for users, not just with the TLD string.
So you're suggesting there's a goal to minimize brand dilution for an existing
TLDs, right?
TLD operator.
Existing or future, because obviously it's an ongoing issue.
Yeah, so picking that particular one, I mean, isn't that essentially where the trademark approach is basically saying that as long as there's not user confusion?
I don't think you can trademark TLDs.
Oh, I thought that the approach was using as trademark. Because basically that's what you're trying to do with a trademark. The discussion we had yesterday was just using an analogy of saying, trademark laws developed over hundreds of years, and one of the reasons you have a trademark is you're protecting the brand and you're indicating to consumers that this product, this piece of paper is from such and such a company, and it's represented by the fact that it's got a brand on there. And then there is mechanisms to say, well, someone else creates another piece of paper and says, well, here's our logo for this piece of paper. And then you're saying, well, we've got to make sure that the users can clearly identify the logo on that piece of paper and the logo on that piece of paper. It's under user confusion. I just want to identify, is this really a separate point?
I don't think it's helpful to confuse it with the trademark issue because they're different. We can't trademark.com, but I can tell you that because of one place that has an IDN version of .com right now, we get calls because of problems people are having, and it's a translation or transliteration of .com as a TLD and an alternate root server. And so that's the kind of issue that creates user confusion, and it does dilute the brand.
Is that using a different script?
Excuse me?
Is that using a different script?
Yes.
That's a different script.
Excuse me? No, it was. I think this one was, it may happen with several, but this happened to be, I think, the Israeli one.
I would like to understand the kind of cost that is incurred.
Excuse me?
I would like to understand the kind of cost you are referring to.
Cost?
Cost. That's what I heard, right?
I wasn't...
Because of the existence of .com in another script, language script.
Well, I wasn't specifically talking about cost. I was talking about the dilution of the .com brand. Now, obviously, you could, I suppose, talk about cost impact with that, but I certainly wasn't doing that.
I guess what I'm struggling is a different script. I don't understand how you've used the term brand there. I don't understand how that's brand dilution.
I guess I don't understand what you don't understand.
Well, if you've got a script that doesn't look anything like .com, how does that dilute the brand .com? That's what I'm struggling with.
Ask the users who called us.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not fascinated to understand that.
Okay, it's pretty clear, it seems to me.
Just for clarification, would you consider that this as a brand dilution due to the brand as well?
You know, I don't think we encountered that at all, Tom. With Fizz, and nor am I aware that we ever really were concerned about that. I don't think that has been an issue at all.
So, excuse me, I understand. I mean, I have a problem with dealing with what you think or what is your impression and the reality, or is it documented? Have you evaluated some cost or the consequences of .biz or .commercial in the Chinese character, for example? And second, isn't it that you are saying competition has some cost?
No, I don't think that's what I'm saying.
I guess I'm also trying to understand.
Perhaps we could take, we should think about whether we're doing a whiteboarding exercise.
Well, I guess we could just get the list. The reason I'm just pushing back on this is this is kind of going in a slightly different direction, effectively, we've moved away from a user benefit here, essentially, into a benefit of the operator of a particular script. And that's what I'm trying to understand a little bit more, because that benefit, that granting of the rights to a particular string, is not dissimilar to granting the right to a particular trademark. And then if someone else then wants to apply for a trademark, one of the things you are looking at is protecting the existing right, and the boundaries of that are pretty much the first one. It's minimizing user confusion, not just because it's got to be to an ordinary person, do they look the same? It's a little bit different to say, well, because the first one has historically never seen to run parts of the internet, will that person, the first people can place it? Because we get that as Melbourne IT in Australia, and so everything to do with the internet is our problem. It's not really related to the brand, though.
Can I comment to that? I just would like to understand, because, for instance, I might think that there are analogies for us to examine in the existence and coexistence of spectrum allocation in bands, et cetera. I have an objection as well to the use of the word brand here, since you cannot trademark .com. I prefer we not use the term brand, but I need to understand, are we going to brainstorm a list and then debate the list, or are we just going to go person by person around the table and address each? And I'm happy to do either one.
Yeah, well, maybe we should just try and brainstorm the list a little bit.
By the way, I'm okay with a different term if you want to suggest one. I was trying to go to the list, and you stopped me, so I'll continue.
Yes.
The third one I said was providing diverse choices for users. And by that, don't just mean, and by the way, this was in a constituency statement, don't just mean choice of the TLD itself, different levels of service, different, maybe even different levels of security, assuming that there's the minimum level, required level for security and stability of the Internet is maintained.
So this
different costs, different, you know.
Chuck, is that a goal of introducing new TLDs? Because I just want to focus, this is specifically dealing with why we're trying to trade
it. It would be differentiation of TLDs and the services behind them. Is what I'm suggesting. Whether or not the group buys that is another issue, but I'm suggesting that that's differentiation. You differentiate yourself not only with the string, but in the service that goes with that string. And different communities of users have different needs.
Keep going on.
And then the fourth one I jotted down was avoiding conflicts. For example, we talked about intellectual property conflicts, possible conflicts related to country names or things like that. So I think TLDs can differentiate themselves with regard to that as well. And that particular one, maybe it fits better in another category instead of differentiation. I don't know, but it could be fit into differentiation. That's my list.
So I just want to clarify there's two different types of goals here. It might be your business goal in your choice of a string. And so if I was giving advice to somebody putting forward a string, I would say you should make sure you differentiate yourself from the other providers to create your area of the market. That would be my advice to somebody putting forward a string. What I'm looking at here is the goals for selection criteria. So some of those things you put there are absolutely reasonable, that an operator putting forward a proposal should be providing choice to the user, should avoid conflict with the other things, all those sorts of things. But this discussion is very focused. It's basically saying, what are the goals in restricting, so let me just kind of make the heading a little bit clear. What are the goals for restricting the choice of string by an applicant? Because this is a restriction we're putting in here. Okay, so if we're going to, the first one which we seem to have agreement is where someone puts forward COMM, we are going to say no. We are actually restricting them in the ability to offer COMM. That's us putting in a restriction. If someone decides to create .biz, and you might say, well, that's not confusing with shindler.com, but you might say that's not a very good business choice because it's too, you're not really creating any new choice for users, you haven't created any new purpose, your business isn't going to be very successful. We're not restricting them, we're just advising them. That's probably not a good idea to launch something like this. So I just want to separate that this goal, so far I've seen one on the top, which to me clearly seems to be addressing the goals for restricting the choice of the string. But I'm not clear whether those others are in that category.
Yeah, the difference that we're having is related to a very narrow definition of differentiation in your part and a broader one in my part.
Sure.
So I guess we need to decide what, you know, I think the differentiation is broader. That's why I took the approach I did than you do, but maybe everybody else doesn't agree with that.
I'm not worried about broadening it. I'm just trying to not make it just broad. so that's why I'm saying you sort of, in your solution, you were saying you were making, effectively you were talking language and other things, and that seemed to go a lot broader. Like, it would be quite reasonable for someone to propose in a particular language, in a particular part of the world, that they want to create a TLD for the purpose of those people in that language community, but that say for the purpose of travel. That to me doesn't necessarily provide any user confusion, because it's very clearly defined TLD for that purpose.
But it would have an impact on the .travel TLD.
Right, but that's competition. So this is the thing that we're trying to separate here. When you say an impact, of course it does. Competition has an impact on the existing operator. If your objective is to be able to create, in a sense, a franchise that's protected from competition, yes, you can create a number of rules to do that if that's your end objective. if your end objective is to minimize user confusion, then you're really looking at the string and you're saying, is that string, could that be confused with another string? As well as kind of trademark concept developed, is that you brand, you have your mark, whether it's your ring seal or something, or your signature or whatever it is, and you want to distinguish that mark and make sure that no one copies your mark and makes it look the same.
I actually understand the goal of minimizing user confusion a little bit more broadly. I think user confusion does not necessarily stem from the fact that the string of confusion is similar to another. I think user confusion can also stem from the fact that one community is, or one marketplace is represented in one particular and one PID, and there would be an overlap with a new community that is being created. For example, if you have that museum, that's actually, we're assuming a lot of things. We're already assuming that people will necessarily put forward something that makes sense, and where the name of the PID corresponds with something that will then be found, and that people will register the domain name. And if then somebody had a PID that was archived, for example, or learning, it would be very hard to say. I think actually there should also be a demarcation between the purposes.
Well, that's where, exactly, so then we're going into a very different area, I think, yeah. So I'm still sort of trying to understand what the goals of making that restriction. So you're basically suggesting you're dividing it by a purpose. So you basically say you're granted the franchise for the purpose of sport, and nobody else can have a CLD if that's for the purpose of sport, but that's essentially the direction you're heading there, is that right? And if I have a TLD for the museum, and someone says I'm going to create a TLD that's for the same kind of community, but competition is a different approach. Competition is saying, okay, your TLD for dot sport, and you're offering the TLD with all these benefits. I reckon my TLD for dot sport's better. I've got these other benefits and these other things that are better, and so I'm going to compete with you. And I'm going to say, right, you've got dot XYZ, and you're offering with every .xyz you get a free football, and I'm offering .ijk, and every IJK domain I'm going to bundle in a hockey stick. So I'm giving choice there. There's no confusion. I mean, people know XYZ doesn't look anything like IJK. They can brand it completely differently, but I'm still going after the same target market, which is those people that want a sporting domain.
I think there's two kinds of, though, names. For example, in the .com that he was mentioning, a .com transliterated to Hebrew is one thing, and I'm not sure I necessarily agree, but I'm distinguishing it. A .shuk, which is the Hebrew word for com, perhaps, or marketplace, would be another, and one is obviously competitive. The .shuk, even if you could say that's equivalent to a com, it's different. Whereas the dot, I'm not sure how they did it, whether it was a kuf vav mem shafit or whatever, but is a different. I'm not sure I agree with that being excluded, but it is a different sort of thing. It's just like taking dot sport and transliterating
Versus matching character by character as opposed to meaning.
Right, there's a different kind of confusion there. Yes. The Hebrew writer might not recognize that .com. They hear the sound .com, they type the .com in Hebrew letters, they get what they get, and that may be confusing. As I say, I'm not absolutely sure I agree with it, but I do see a distinction.
So it's your saying then, there is another level of distinction as well, I agree. So if I'm dealing with, say, ABC in Latin characters, and I use it in Greek characters, would be what, alpha, beta, gamma. That's the kind of thing you're talking about there. So alpha, beta, gamma, for somebody that doesn't speak Greek, well, even if it's someone that does speak Greek, we've got that
meaning.
Bruce, the problem with the word brand dilution up there is that we're missing the concept of spend. Typically, brand dilution is used in competition law, where you're talking about either whether maybe brand dilution is without a fair competition, in which case that's tough luck, that's the way life is, and that's what you're talking about in sport and football. poison brand dilution via unfair means.
Yes.
And that's, I think, maybe what Chuck is hinting at, which is the theft of somebody else's reputation, trying to use their reputation to ride
the back. But to do that by confusing people,
exactly.
Isn't that just part of? I'm trying to say that probably collapses back into using
it. It does. In this context, it's a subset of confusion. Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's it's confusion. It's intentional confusion by a third party to ride upon the reputation of another.
Yeah.
That's what unfair brand dilution.
Yes. And I didn't actually understand, I must admit, in way you were describing the issue with the language. So you're saying transliteration, you mean by just basically translating the characters across?
Well, and again, I'm not an expert in all of the things with IDNs, but my understanding is that in some cases the transliteration doesn't even work in some scripts, so that doesn't always apply.
Mm.
Certainly where it would, that could be the case.
Yeah.
I doubt if that was the case in the Hebrew example, but I have to research
that. So the current wording Chuck at the moment doesn't actually say just typographic. This is the wording we have at the moment. That's where we have it. And I'm just wondering whether maybe we're covering that particular case with what we've got. So if we're saying that, just have a look up on the screen again. The TLD doesn't mention typographic there at all. It just says the TLD string should not be confusingly similar to an existing TLD string. Confusingly similar means that there is a likelihood of confusion on the part of the relevant public. That's kind of a typical test that's used in trademarks. I don't think that's saying just typographic. It could be script-based, for example. If you have a script that you're saying translates across and people are confused, then what you'd be able to say is you have evidence that people are confused in that particular scenario. And that would be a reasonable basis to reject that string. I just want
to
go...
That makes sense to me. And you may very well be right on that, that it's encompassed in that. I think Ray has an interesting example that, in that regard, I think that supports your point.
Yeah, as an example, it's the... Ken, what's the German word for travel? Is it Reisen?
Reisen. German word for tourism, travel,
reason, right? Okay, right. Well, just to stay with that one, I thought it was a direct translation. But anyway, one of the assumptions being made here is that everybody speaks one language, when in reality...
Well, let me just slide that. I'll just put it on the screen so we know what we're talking about. So you're comparing what? Travel?
Travel and...
And...
Can you spell that, Vernon?
Well, so have I got that right up there, Ben? Is that right?
But is the image in the German language, when you use that word, the effect of tourism or travel?
Yeah. Yeah. And you must be sure it is the word reise, which is different from the word travel.
Well, the point I wanted to make was just that the assumption is that we're assuming an individual only speaks one language when, in fact, people speak multiple languages. So let's just take the example of somebody, a user, goes to abc.travel in the morning. They speak both German and English. They go to abc.travel in the morning. They get a certain user experience. And then later that same day, because they speak two different languages fluently, they go to abc.risen, and they get now an entirely different user experience. And that could be confusing to this individual who happens to be equally fluent but in both languages. Just wanted to throw that out.
Yeah, and one of the questions, and we talked about this a little bit, Chuck, before you got here yesterday, but one of the questions is, does this mean, in this example, abc.travel, that you should not have abc.risen, or does it mean that the incumbent for .travel ought to be able to have abc.risen? I think the argument that I just heard is that there should never be an ABC.Ryzen. And I don't know that that's necessarily fair to the chairman speaker.
So your example is a person that is
using both of those above kind of alternatively. And then my question would be, if we go, and I'm not against that as a concept, your test here is, this is the test. So, and I think it's going back to what Philip was saying, relevant public. Is that a typical confusion that people will have? If it is, then it's probably captured under this.
I think that's a confusion too far, personally. I think it's that there's words that are so different, albeit addressing the same concept, that in the context of the domain name world, it is insufficiently confusing to pass the typical test that would in the trademark world, certainly. I would not have that on the list. I would not have any restriction on somebody wanting to cross license, personally.
So in Germany, let's say, and I don't know, also can probably answer this, it might be difficult because we're dealing with generic words too, that probably makes it harder. But would that be a consideration, you know, for a trademark office? That someone has a particular string that happens in German and then someone was asking for the equivalent in English? Would that be grounds for rejecting them as a trademark?
Assuming it wasn't a generic term, which had precluded from trademark protection. Right. You know, obviously these sorts of terms can never be protected by trademark law in any way because they're generic, so they cannot be proprietary.
So let's, from a trademark point, you could trademark the word, hang on a second, what's the screen?
But you cannot protect the word as such. But in the way it is written and in the way it appears, but not in general, you cannot keep people from using the word after a session in a commercial context.
But I could trademark that as a word string, can't I? Look up there. That complete string, ABC Travel, could you trademark, is that right? Now, if I have ABC Ryzen, just as a separate word, would the owner of the trademark ABC Travel be able to say, object to ABC Ryzen on the basis that, on meaning, as in I? Yeah, in Germany, yeah.
In Germany?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking about in Germany, yeah. So someone in Germany...
Could certainly
object whether it would be granted, I don't know, but I think that's what... I think you have to be able to object to the objection itself. Yeah. Okay, I'm really asking the question of whether the objection would be successful, because I'm just going to be careful not creating rules here that just don't seem to match elsewhere in the world. Yeah. Ken, and then Mikey.
Well, I guess, let's take this one step further then. If I was going to propose a new string, and I wish there was someone here with a strong sense of Spanish, and maybe there is. Let's suppose that I proposed a word that had an identical meaning in Spanish. Okay, let's assume for the hell of it that travel was the English word, and that the Spanish word that had identical meaning was rising, okay? I know it isn't. Let's assume the back of it is, okay? So, suppose that I propose for two PLDs mirrored, like the concept you and I talked about, so that, in effect, when you register in one, the registration becomes a mirror for the same in the other TLD string. The reason behind that is that some Spanish-speaking people are going to use the Spanish word for the TLD. English-speaking people would use the English word, and yet, regardless, they would still
arrive at the same site, because any case that the DNS in one would be mirrored in the other.
Yeah, so that to me would say that, and this is kind of, I think, where the crux of the kind of language and script ultimately comes down to. If we're talking about a clean slate, and let's forget we've had any exact TLDs at all, and we said today we're now opening up proposals for TLDs, it would seem quite reasonable for the operator of a commercial TLD, we'll call it com, to say, I want .com, and I want .blah blah blah in Chinese characters, and I want .blah blah blah in Japanese characters, and so on. And then likewise, I would expect .travel would say, okay, we're going to address, we're going to choose a string which we think will be used by most people in the world, and English is a strong language, so we'll choose travel in English. But we also recognise that Spanish is a very strong language. We also recognise that a lot of people speak Chinese, a lot of people speak Russian, a lot of people speak Arabic. So this TLD applicant for the travel industry could actually propose 10 strings, let's say, representing 10 of the major languages, and they would propose that in their application, say, I want this plus these. That, to me, would be reasonable, as that we shouldn't be assuming that someone applying for a string would only apply for one string. I don't see any objection to someone applying for a separate string. The issue would be, once they have, let's say they've applied for 10 strings in the 10 markets that they have sought, so they've gone for English, Arabic, Chinese, whatever, and it's passed all the string tests, what would then stop somebody who is in Swahili or, you know, it's a completely different script and language, is there any issue with them creating a TLD that means the same thing? Because my view on this is no, there's not. As long as you, at the time that you apply for your travel, have the opportunity to say, these are the languages and markets that I am going to be operating in, I'm going to apply for these strings. If 2 years down the track someone chooses a string that is in another language that you're not addressing, that should be fine. You know, that's kind of where I'm.
I guess the difference, or maybe I didn't get it clear, would be that I would propose in a case like that that you really have I'm not getting technical, so maybe Omar can help me here as we move on. Am I talking about separate DNS for each TLD, but it's a similar DNS, so that if you make a change in one, it automatically applies to the other.
There, could do that, yeah. Let's let it go there. Let's just talk about the strings for the moment.
Well, the only other difference there is that if you take 10 different ones, then you have 10 people arguing from 10 different communities that this organization may not be the best one to effectively serve the community, you know. So I get it. Whereas I'm just trying to get rid of the problem of perception or differentiation.
I think this is kind of where Brent was going before, is trying to understand, is someone objecting to say that you can't have that string, or we're saying the existing operator can have that string because, you know, they want to address different language markets, and they're different things. I think if you're saying they can't have the string at all, then no one gets the string. But I think it's quite reasonable that in any competitive process, if you want .ryzen, .travel is equally able to have .ryzen as say, Brentford wants to have .ryzen, and then there's an allocation process that we use to deal with that. But the string .ryzen is allowable, essentially.
Yeah, my point was that if it's confusing to users, it's confusing whether, you know, the travel people run both or someone else runs the other one.
Yep,
go ahead.
What is it, Jim?
I think
Milwaukee was after me. You called on me, and then I think.
Okay, I agree with what the way Bruce approaches this question rather than the previous argument, because I'm afraid that we are going to develop, if we go that way, we are going to develop rules that are not even valid for trademarks. It's not because you register for a trademark, which is a generic name, for example, that you own the mark through diverse languages, different languages. Right? It's not because the example of Dot Travel and Dot Horizon. We said Dot Travel could object to Dot Horizon in a specific country because of the confusion not creating the mind of the public. But the objection might fail, as Philip said. Because they haven't registered for Dot Horizon. So now we are saying for GTLD, because I registered for Dot Travel, the community should assume that I own the meaning of that travel in Dot Travel in other languages. I think that's too much, as compared to the regulation or to the rule applied to trademarks. Normally, the GTLD are less than trademarks. They are not trademarks then. If we were to compare, I would say they are less than that. Is it clear what I'm saying?
I think I understand that a lot, but I've been thinking about what ICANN's job is versus what the job of a winner of a registry, a signer, an applicant of a registry string is. And ICANN's job, I think, in this particular space is to create competition at the registry level, to create choice, to minimize confusion, and to ensure the stability of the internet. Right?
Okay.
So, the idea that because I am given an allocation to operate a space, has never to me meant I'm given that allocation in perpetuity or without competition in the generic namespace. And then I think the question is, we've already said, what's fair competition? So I would just give an example that, you know, I think we've learned that it takes a while for domain names to be recognized and take hold and for registration to begin. So there may actually be, I don't know that it's a policy, but there may be a consideration for stability where we would say domain names need, once a registry is allocated, it needs an initial period of time to become stable. And after that, a name that is directly competitive can be considered. Now, I'm just thinking about the .travel example here. I'm not sure it's but generally, I think our goal should be competition at the registry level and differentiation and choice. So if that's our goal, then a registry operator is going to have to limit the ability of a registry operator to prevent competitive entry.
You're assuming, Marilyn, that competition can't happen unless it's a very similar string. I think that's a false assumption.
That's not my assumption at all, and I am happy to explain. Yes, I don't think anybody else misunderstood me. If you want me to do that.
I do.
Okay. So the business constituency's position has been that it's through differentiation that competition can exist. But the reality is that you can have such a significant amount of market share or such a significant amount of awareness in the market that it takes time for a new entrant to compete at all. I might use one of the companies I advise as a good example, AT&T. It took a long time for brand recognition to emerge in the United States in the area of long-distance competition, but MCI and Sprint managed to eventually win the day, helped by the regulator, and now there's very robust competition. Had the company been able to prevent the entry of competition and to prevent and not been held accountable by the regulator, I don't know that we would have seen the kind of robust long-distance competition that happened in the United States. But at least in the competition, in the company.
Right, but they certainly didn't allow the use of the company's name.
But name is not the only way that you are dominant as a supplier. You may also be dominant in facilities. You may be dominant in awareness. You may be dominant in just recognition. So I think all of those things are things that we need to think about since we're sitting here trying to address the development of competition at the registry level as well as balancing stability.
Tom? Yes, I'm one people that I'm on what example Campbell's giving a while ago. It's talking about that the community is served pretty good by having translation all looking up to the same website in different languages. Which I don't actually know whether that really serves the community at all. So for example, if the German users would call up some CLD that travel, he would expect probably an English website. If he would enter a website with a dot ING, he probably would accept the German website. So that comes down to regulation. So for example, if that travel doesn't have any regulation at all, it could be a Spanish website. So if it mirrors directly to the travel in German, that doesn't really do the user well favor actually. So it's more confusing to him because he said, well, that same stuff, why is it in English? Why is it not in German? I expect German websites. Now, that could cause confusion on one hand. The other thing is that it really has operations problems with people running the PLD, or not running the PLD, but running the second level under the PLD, because people might expect that if you write an email to a second level under that reason, that there's an email account actually taking on the email. But actually, there's only a registration for the travel. And there's an email account under that travel. But it's not on Horizon or under, I don't know what the Spanish equivalent for that word is. But it's achieving a lot of problems, actually. And I don't think that it serves at all to anyone. Besides that, that Horizon might have a different meaning to certain people as travel. So I don't think that if you cross the language border that you will find the direct equivalent. And in the case of travel and Horizon, it's pretty obvious that it's more or less the same thing. But you can certainly find different words like we had yesterday with Arbeit and Jobs, which was one very descriptive and has a real good defined purpose in the English language. Arbeit doesn't have that, and I don't think that you really would be able to have a find equivalent to Jobs because it would be Arbeitsstelle, to be very precise. Which could mean different things as well, right? Because something you have, something you offer. So it's really hard to make any kind of distinction what the real equivalent is. I doubt that there's anyone out there who can find that. Besides that, how you want to spread that out through equivalent over all countries and scripts, or languages and scripts. And who do you think to serve that? That's something you can come to my mind. Don't see any easy answer for that.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple of premises. One, part of this is to allow those from the community to submit applications for top-level domains. Now, Bruce is, we talk a lot about trademark and trying to come up with corresponding, you know, things that have been decided in that particular realm and then trying to apply to the top level, and there's logic to that. And then Bruce has now offered a concept towards that, which is a bundled service, where, you know, it might be logical for a new applicant to step forward to say, got home, and in Spanish that's casa, and it might make reasonable sense to avoid user confusion to bundle those two together at the time of the application. Now, that, number one, that becomes kind of a decision of the applicant. So to allow the applicant to do that is right? So to allow the applicant to do that is interesting, which is something that didn't exist in prior rounds, by the way. So if that makes sense, there does become, and when you look at IBN, obviously I think a lot of this topic is about the fact that IBN is about coming into the root, and as of now, even a more level of urgency, if you will, to this idea of bundling, and then allowing the applicant to propose a bundling solution. But the question then becomes, because IBN is new,
the legacy operators that didn't have a chance to go into a bundled environment, if you will, when making their applications. And should that, and since we are talking a lot about trademarks, a lot about how, what, you know, what is going on, and we've done the EDRP, we've done the dispute resolution idea, what about a sunrise period for legacy operators to come in and do a file in a bundled approach? I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, why I'm leading that discussion on the bundle a little bit more is that when we come to deal with IDNs, I mean, that's very much going to be the issue, I think, because, you know, it's a new thing, and even having different languages hasn't really been an option. You've been given just one CLD.
But from a selection criteria, I mean, it doesn't make sense to, for an operator to have a sunrise period. So Josh could file for ARBIT. Because we didn't have the opportunity before,
yeah.
So now...
But you could do that in a couple of ways, right? You could do that in the next round, and then we talk about allocation processes. So if it's first come, first served, then you put your application straight away. You'd think you'd have a pretty good chance because you've already got a... You should meet all the criteria, you know, you've got all the technical stuff. It's not like you have to write some huge application. So you would think that you would have a pretty good chance.
Except for the fact that someone could be motivated to file for the Chinese character of COM,
yeah,
because they know VeriSign might be interested in filing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay?
So, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I agree.
So they're giving VeriSign a first shot, say, you know, and that's not good language, but using a sunrise process that has been vetted out as a solution to this kind of problem.
Yeah.
Something that...
I think it's worthy of further consideration, absolutely, a sunrise process for either the kind of multiple language or multiple string approach. Yeah.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Yeah.
Just a clarifying question on the bundle. When you talk about bundles, are you talking about one application fee, one name fee? Or are you saying, yeah, you could put two of them together, but you're paying two fees and two this and two that, and it's two names, but they just happen to be a joined application?
Well, Bruce brought that forward, so I'll let him answer that. It's a bundle idea.
Do you want to introduce it?
Let me answer the first one. I think it would depend on the nature of the registry. What I recall the thing about Ponder was in the single registry that, in effect, ran
parallel TLDs. In other words, if you register in one, it automatically becomes a registration in the other. You would pay one registration fee. It's just that you're running two lookup deals. And in a case like that, you know, it depends on what the policy is regarding application fees. Do you define application fees by use, or do you define them by the string? You know, if you said, well, you have to pay X number of dollars for every string that you apply for, regardless of whether, because I'll give you an example. If I was Mark Blucher, if I was .edu, I might very well, hypothetically, there may be a universal descriptor for educational institutions, for colleges, for instance, that applies. I'll use an example, library bibliotech. I mean, if I question almost everyone in the room, and I call it a bibliotech to a Frenchman or Spanish and so forth, the perception is identical, so why not?
Yes. Yeah. Maybe my question was, I was asking about the registry in getting the time for the fee, not the users.
Let's just be careful not go down a rat hole on that, but just to look at current practice. Current practice is that you would have a separate registry fee for the TLD. If you're talking about the application process for registrars, there are some registrars that actually have 400 sub-registrars, and it's a separate application fee for each. So that's kind of a personal. I'm not saying that's a good personal, but that's
one of the things. Just for clarification, though, in the TLD application process, there was the opportunity for an applicant to suggest one, two, or three, their first letter.
But they're only allowed one.
And they were only allowed one. They paid one application fee, and that was a way of quite simply resolving student contention, because the applicant could choose.
Well, not really. You're not giving them the opportunity to have multiple students.
So what my point was, though, that they didn't have a choice to operate three different things.
Yeah.
They had a choice to operate one, and they paid one fee.
Yeah. that. So, but that's something, if we start looking at that allocation around a little bit more, you would like to think about the space change. Just careful, we're still going to focus on what thing you can have as opposed to how you pay for the money.
Since we're recording this, it's Marilyn speaking, I just really want to be clear that the task force as a whole is discussing competition, not competition. Correct? So we're talking about creating competition, not preventing competition. So none of our discussion here today should be construed as limiting competition to existing registries.
Well, you're putting that statement on the record. I'm
just asking.
Well, if you're asking the question, are we discussing not having competition, I think that's a rhetorical question. Who's next?
Now, also for the record, I would hesitate to consider a summary period that would give existing registries a first shot at new PLDs. The sunrise period that we have otherwise, that we're familiar with, but that you incentivize, that is for people who have an established trademark interest, and it is very well justified because it is necessary and essential to avoid cyber squatting and a very, very difficult cleanup period afterwards. So I think we all understand the justification of that. I think here, I wouldn't see the justification at all, and I think it would be a serious obstacle for the competition that we're also concerned about.
Yeah, so that's, again, let's not go down a rat hole on that fact. We're still dealing with whether you can have the stream, not the allocation and sunrise processes. Chuck just said, well, I think Ray was saying that that might be something we'd consider as part of looking at introducing IDMs or something like that. We're not trying to solve that problem now. Who's next in the queue? And why?
Just a clarifying question for Ben. When you say an initial registration in one language will lead to having automatically registration in a second language, how do you identify the second language? Are you talking about the language of the entity that registers? Like if a German entity registers for .jav or .travel?
I guess what I'm saying is the adaptation between the system to the application. In other words, if I wanted to apply to two strings that in my research had literally identical meanings in two separate languages or universal, and I would use it as an example just with the help of travel and rice. Okay, let's assume that the two strings had identical, and when I say identical thoughts, I can't say, if I take 100 German speaking people and ask them what it means, their perception is identical to what I would get from 100 English people. The reason I'm going to apply to the German string is because there are millions of Germans who have a perception of this type of service that I would be offering.
But you may have dozens of languages where you have identical meaning for different streams.
That's fine. So someone else could apply for the Swahili.
So how do you select the second language? Is it up to...
The second language is in the proposal. In other words, I propose that because I want to serve these two communities,
okay, so the
thing might argue you can't have whole communities because we don't think that you can justify the perception being identical.
Okay, what you're saying is that the registrar will be given the opportunity to choose a certain language. It's up to
given the opportunity, I would propose the language and I can or whoever establishes the criteria for evaluating the proposal. I'm not saying it's an exclusivity. I mean, you don't just automatically get it. What I'm saying is you have to make a
But what you're saying is that everybody could apply for the TLD you'd like to have as well, right? So if you, oh, if you stick with that example, would it be a confusing similar, and that's a good story discussion we're having, is would it be a confusing similar if you run out your patient as a third party for that item, if that travel's already written?
Let me tell you something. If you apply for that
direction,
and if I was pro-life, you better believe I would be arguing. I'm already serving in the international travel community.
We're not talking about, as far as I know, we're still talking about the string, right? We're not talking about the...
That's correct. We are still talking about the string, yeah.
We're not talking about the content, right? Yeah. Who you serve and what community you serve.
That's right.
So,
but, I mean, it's
by no means in any way confusing them on the string level.
It still comes back to this, right? One of the reasons why we're trying to avoid confusion of strings is the first one, is reliability, security, and so on. It's a security issue. If people are commonly, they're getting deceived by phishing attacks, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one of our core objectives is number one. The second one is where reasonable appropriate depending on market mechanism. Differentiating your product is a market mechanism that is open to all. Everybody can differentiate their product. That's a well-established market mechanism to compete against someone else. So, and then to pick up Philip's concept about unfair competition is when you are deceiving someone into believing that you are that other person. And I think if you can put up a case which is under a kind of established precedent around trademark, this is essentially what you're doing. And so if you look at the trademark law that I put up yesterday, it basically said a trademark provides protection to the owner of the mark by ensuring the right to use it to identify their service, and it hinders the efforts of unfair competitors to use similar distinct signs to mark an inferior or different products or services. And that's really the purpose around that confusion thing. So the wording that we have at the moment is supposed to be the solution to those points one and two, which is to say that we're trying to do two things. One is we're trying to make sure that we're not creating a security problem by having strings that are confusingly similar. And that doesn't, and I'll stress again, the confusing similar doesn't constrain it in any way to be specifically a typo. It's whatever, the test is, would the general public be confused by that string, right? And I've used a couple of examples there that we're not getting too much argument against. I don't think the Jobs and Arbit one fits that test. Some people may do that, but I'd be happy for that to be dealt with by a panel. In other words, you would raise that as a dispute, and you would present your evidence as to why users are going to be confused by that, and that would stand on its merits, just as if I was in Germany and wanted to dispute that, I would go and use whatever the processes are. I either win or lose. But the test is still, is there a likelihood that the public would be confused? That's the test. The test is not, am I going to get competition because I'm going to lose my brain, and that's not the test.
Example of
writing. So, I think one of the things that this will probably be very similar to the trademark scenarios. It's going to be built up a little bit by case law. I think as ICANN, the organisation, as these panels make decisions, that probably just provides more clarity now.
So one point on this is that we're really talking about well-traveled ground, because we're talking about what should the policy be for settling these disputes within a registry. We already have second-level registries, so you could have travel.com and rising.com, and they might be registered as the same entity, they might not be, there might be some confusion, there might not be.
That's right.
The same question, just at a level.
Yeah, the other example I was just giving there in terms of things that might look the same that exist today. That I'm aware of in the Australian market, there is .com, .com.au and au.com. They're all registries operating in Australia. And at initial glance, you might say, gee, they look pretty similar, but they all operate quite quite separately. Now, it is true, users get confused. There are users that get confused between .com and .com.au, so they will type somebody's name using that kind of language example. They will type, because they last typed blah 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 .com, and they forget the .au, they'll probably go to a different website. But users seem to be able to manage that. But that exists today.
I just want to add one point, which is the ability for an applicant to file for a bundle never existed.
Yes.
Now, Jobs has gone out and built a business on Jobs, a brand, if you will, and then we allow a new applicant to come in and they file for another language for the sole reason because of an existing operator didn't have the opportunity to file for that previously. They're taking advantage of the brand that another operator has invested in.
But then did you have to be able to prove, are they taking advantage of the brand? Because trademark law would protect you there and the right to use problem, right? Or the approach would, if you like. Let's deal with allocations as a separate discussion. But now we're assuming, what do we do when you apply for it and someone else applies for it? So let's say you want Verizon. You as Dr. Travel say, okay, we're now going to address the German market. You put forward an application for Verizon. And someone else puts forward an application for Verizon. How do we then address that contention issue? Yeah.
So right now we have something of a, we have this protest concept in place, right?
I'm talking about...
Someplace in our document up here we have this idea that the existing registry would file a comment.
That would be under confusingly similar.
Right.
But what we've said there, which is a bit of a different thing, Ray's talking about the opportunity, we're saying Verizon is allowed to exist. In the discussion we had earlier, we were saying that as part of this confusingly similar process, under confusingly similar process, point C was a string that is successfully challenged as being misleadingly similar. And no operator
right. But so let's take the example of .jobs or .travel. And
yep.
We are opening around and there is the opportunity to apply to, and there's an application for...
The question I'm asking here is, let's separate the scenario from jobs not applying for it at all versus jobs applying for it. If jobs is not applying for it at all, then it can challenge under this and just have the TLD taken off the
right.
It's not allowed, right?
Or
if Jobs is applying for it, then it's an allocation question.
Right.
So they have applied for it and someone else is applying.
And
for
so
it.
They could present evidence that they have in fact been marketing, their website is translated into German, they have been serving that market, and that's a continued justification for why they should be the preferred awardee.
Could be. Let's have that discussion under allocation. I just want to separate those two discussions. So the first part, what we're dealing with now, is a complaint about the existence of this string, because it's confusing users for all sorts of reasons, and we're saying, like, the .com and the .com, .com will not be allowed for anybody based on that challenge.
Kind of questions and categories. I don't know if they're under this or something else. One is sort of you brought up, but there's a whole category of things like .aus, .usa, .nex, and I wonder whether that's falling into this category or some other category.
I'm lost in that
song, but so somebody, we have .mx, .us, .au,
.it, sorry, .mx.
And now we have .nex.
Oh, these are country equivalent
right.
examples, which we haven't addressed.
You probably...
.us, .usa, .au, .aus. Is this confusingly similar or is this something different?
But this is going to come into a discussion, the joint discussion between the CCNSO and us, isn't it? Because these are the question right now, country codes If it is a three-letter string, it cuts it out, not by definition.
It's interesting because what I originally pre-drafted that ought to be GTLDs. What you're basically saying is it should be TLDs.
Yeah.
So it would be reasonable to, if I was the owner of .us and someone put .usa, notwithstanding the fact there might be rules on placelines and stuff, but they would challenge that because that probably would be considered to be confusingly similar.
Okay, so a country code manager, we have to be really clear, it's not an owner of a string, right? It's a country code manager of the two-letter codes.
Would complain. So that would, what we should probably then change the wording there is it's just to broaden that. Is that essentially what you're trying to do? So what's the issue for each scenario? Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
I think it's an issue. I don't know where in your...
Think what I should probably do is in the final version of this, we use the term TLD, not GTLD. Because there should be confusion with... Because what about nil and presumably, we don't want milli or something going out to military. So things that are not typically within our purview, that it's still the issue of confusion.
Dot arrow and dot arrow. A-E-R-O and dot A-R-R-O-W. There's other kinds of confusion, not just typographical and sound alike.
Yeah, no, that is captured in this. Yes.
Under confusing words?
Yes. If the delightful that users would be confused.
We have a
white
Yeah.
So pronunciation we intended to capture, right?
Yeah.
So com.com was the example used. .conn is pronounced the same way .con is. So I think we intended to capture dot arrow and dot arrow. We just didn't use it as an example.
Yeah, you're just on slippery ground here. If somebody has a trademark in A-R-R-O-W and somebody else registers A-E-R-O.com, I don't know that the owner of the arrow, like the bow and arrow trademark, is going to have luck getting the
idea. Use on this scenario here.
Yeah.
What do people think about that, John?
Well, those words don't mean the same in any way, right? A-E-R-O is actually not what's a made-up string, isn't it?
Well, it was made up on the day of 20,000.
I mean, yeah, that's right. I mean, there's all sorts of English examples where the pronunciation is pretty natural, isn't it? I would prefer that we basically just stick to our wording, which is confusing and similar, and we use kind of a panel approach, and we just kind of manage it. Because this would be, and as much as possible, I think we should draw on, there's 100 years of trademark experience in these sorts of things, rather than sort of creating a whole new rule set, and sort of advanced time. So it's a confusion.
It's just for completeness, there are some comments on page 8 about on the public comments and recommendations document that you have as an executive summary, which lists a number of potential criminals who expect to see TLD use. So that TLD question comes in.
Yeah, so this is just TLD instead of GTLD. Yeah.
So that was commented on.
Okay. I think it doesn't seem to me that we're moving much beyond that, right? And I think we should stick with that for the moment as something that's got consensus in terms of its current wording. Chuck, there was a question raised yesterday about minority reports. It's absolutely okay for the registry constituency to include in their minority comments that they believe that should be extended to other stuff, whatever word you want. And we just say that's the view of the registry constituency for consideration by the board. But what I'm trying to do in these 2 days is try to identify the areas that we can get we at least agree on that. There may be additional things and the intellectual property constituency can submit saying they want to be differentiated by purpose and so on. But I'm just not seeing either of those two concepts getting sort of super majority support in the sense.
And just to clarify, my input with regard to goals of differentiation were really my own. It's not something that the registry constituency put forward.
Okay. I just want to come back quickly again to what, and then before we go on to another topic, but the other things that Dan raised, which is not about string differentiation, it's about these categories here, trademark, infringement, personal names, pharmaceutical names, geographic terms, technical issues like .xc, .localhost, and controversial political, cultural resistance. So I think that the trademark stuff is probably best handled by a process where, as part of this public comment process, one of the selection criteria is that there should be trademark infringement or should be intellectual property infringement.
In the registrar agreement, there's a phrase in the registrar agreements with registrants, isn't there, Tom, that says something like you sort of attest that you're not infringing the rights of others.
That's true, and I'll find it for you. Yeah.
Where Marilyn Kate is registering MK dot something or other, and what a good string. And I attest I'm not infringing the trademark rights of others, but it's a self-attestation, which is the first line.
Yeah, I guess one of the problems with that is that no customer can really know whether you've infringed any rights or not. So the statement is that he doesn't infringe any rights to his knowledge.
Then what we were talking about before, though, there's an ability for a challenge process that Uta was suggesting, that you say, I want .mk, and then MK finds out about it, and then says, look, here's my trademark.
Certainly that would have to be something more specific than the public comments process otherwise. I mean, in that case, really, you're talking about a totally different issue, and trademark holders would have an outstanding in a different resolution process.
Yes.
Yeah, one additional thing I would like to point out in that respect is that as the land browser, front row period is that a year that's young, it's absolutely no problem to get trademarks all over the world for less than a cent or whatever in minutes.
That is one of the issues that's happened
with
some of the tools.
If I wanted to have some kind of protection against new PLDs coming out, you know, I would just go on and register a ton of trademarks, and if it comes to a dispute, I will file a dispute, and that's it for the PLD. That's not exactly what you're looking for, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of whole experience with .eu recently. On the surface, it sounds fine, but the difficulty is people are interested in trademarks and even generic words, because there'd be some country somewhere in the world that will allow you to have one. And then you can apply. Let me just find that. Sorry?
3779.
So that basically can be added as one of the selection criteria. I'll just throw it up on the screen. Okay, that's in the registrar agreement at the moment, which is that the registered name holder shall represent to the best of their knowledge neither the registration of the name nor the manner to use infringes the legal rights of any third party. That can be a requirement of a TLD applicant, presumably. And then what we're saying is that we have a dispute process that follows... you're talking about then having a dispute process for that also, which is similar to the where the existing... this one here, B, you would say a dispute resolution process whereby intellectual property owners could challenge blah blah blah, would use similar words to do with the trademark. Is that... You understand, I'm not going to go into the detail here, but we'll put that in. Okay, so that's trademarks.
Bruce, can you go back to that, the wording before this? Just one thing I wanted to check on the language you took out of the registration of the RIP RRA. Oh, I guess it was covered there. What I was thinking is obviously a trademark holder could apply for a TLD, and I just want to make sure the language address it.
It's not in the
I think it's okay.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so that's trademark holders. Let's just go through these other categories. Technical, I think we've covered. geographic, we'll get comments from the GAC on that. That then leaves this horrible category here.
Bruce. Yes. I thought in earlier discussion, based on a comment that Aubrey made and I supported, we were talking about, yes, we're going to get comment from the GAC, but we should be thinking about putting some ideas forward to the GAC. And I'm certainly happy.
I don't want to do that now. Or unless people want to engage in that discussion.
Well, I'm just going to make a different proposal that maybe some of the task force members and observers who are interested might spend a little time thinking about how to come up with some ideas and come back to the group by email at another time.
That would be great.
Would that be okay?
Chuck, you said you had some
fees
on that,
too. The views that the registries talked about last week really had more to do with the overall selection process and everything, but in this regard, wouldn't it be good for us to, as, even just as a committee, it could come from the council itself, to go to the GAC right now and ask them to identify what they believe are public policy issues regarding the introduction of the UTL. Instead of waiting until we get through this whole thing.
We haven't been able to do that yesterday.
Okay.
We have actually asked, but what we thought yesterday is we need to do it a little bit more formally on benefits.
Okay, good.
More formal things we need to do. So yes, we shouldn't do that. But what the next step on that discussion, Chuck, was that Avery suggested is maybe it'd be a good idea to have some suggestions coming from this group there's two issues, Chuck. One is, what are the sorts of things that could be an issue? Let's say country code is an issue. And then secondly, country names. And then secondly, what's the mechanism for the GAC to bring things to our attention that meet that criteria? So we could give some thought to that to get the GAC to say, even maybe just in drafting the letter, just put here some ideas that we thought about. What do you think? And if people want to have help draft something, staff, and you can send that to the GAC in the next couple of weeks. So that's the GAC topic. What about this topic? Which is kind of related on this a bit. But an example of controversial, and I won't put some public input, but the controversial example that was given yesterday was Dot Hitler. Obviously we could have Dot Islam for religious terms, or cultural would be what, 40,000 or something. And
Dot Quran. The whole world of political correctness.
Yes.
Can we use, dot crip? For cripples,
There's also the different cultural things, like Tom gave the example of dot pitch, which I think is not allowed. Was one of the seven words in the US that wasn't allowed to be used in broadcasting or something. Which in Australia, that would have virtually no offense, really. That's right, yeah. There is a bird called a tip, that's right. I don't think it is time for lunch. I'm not sure we've got food, have we? Just let me know. But in any case, I want to just deal with this before we break for lunch, and then we'll talk about allocation after lunch. But, how do we address this kind of general issue? Which is, someone's going to propose a string that people are going to get offended by for some reason. How do we deal with that?
I don't know if you've got any choice but a political correctness committee. what else do you have? If you're going to pay any attention to it at all, which I guess people are saying you have to, then you're going to have, like your security committee, you're going to have a PC standing body that looks at every word and says, nope, 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 someone will dislike that. Otherwise, what do you do?
There are frivolous lawsuits and there are frivolous filings, I suppose, but I would assume that generally, if we're talking about, I want to actually operate a registry and I expect entities to register at it.
Yeah. Let's go with dot six, right? I'm sure there will be someone that wants to operate dot six if they had no, if there was no conditions. And if someone proposed that, there'd be a lot of people that will complain about it. And And that's such a pretty close to a real case. Because there's a market for that activity. And but yeah, that's the issue. So I mean, one way of doing it is you do it like in that broadcasting act scenario. You create a list of not allowed names, and that's what you're working on.
The problem with that, Bruce, is, and we of course ran into it with ComNet and Org, and we were using the seven words for the FCC. Is that then you go into other languages where, and it was Japanese was a real clear one, where SHIT was so common there, and that was one of the seven words. So anytime you create a list, I think it's really a problem. Yeah. Would it be fair to say that all of those issues could be categorized as public policy issues and should be handled that way?
Mm-hmm. And then just pump it to the gang.
I mean, if we try to come up with some recommendations in this regard, it's going to be really tough.
Yes, I agree.
And can we really in advance deal with these? I'm not sure it's possible.
So that's something that you don't have a defined list. So there's two approaches to this. There's a defined list approach, which has got problems. But at least it provides some certainty to the person putting forward the application. The other approach is more a case of you put forward a word and then you like to get complaints. But then you've got to have some criteria that you measure those complaints by. So let's say it was a religious term and you said, okay, you might just say the public policy is that you can't have a religious term. And then you'd have to sort of say, well, is Jedi a religious term? Because I know in Australia, just to give an example, we had a census recently, and one of the criteria is when they do a census of the population, they ask you what religion you are. And to get on the list of those religions, it has to be, there's some threshold, it has to be 20,000 people that would say that they're in that religion. So, of course, a bunch of Star Wars fans, which are quite a lot, said, yeah, we're all Jedi's. And so, yeah, that had to be on the census. but the threshold was, you had to be able to, you couldn't just create your own religion and say, yeah, I want mine on the list there, because I've got me and two others that are the members of it. But if you had a legitimate user base, you could. So, I don't know, that's the issue, that you've got to have some criteria against how many people find this offensive or how many people find this controversial.
Bruce, I think if you already have a statement to say that this is a potential barrier, you are already stopping frivolous applications or ones who make that in the first place. So the mere existence of a process will help the problem to be solved. And then you're right, I think you need, in this case, you need a mechanism in terms of a challenge could be made on these grounds, and then you need a process to deal with it. I think that's the only way you can...
I think as Abra says, you ultimately need some panel, maybe the Gaster panel, that makes that decision. So, I'll just use an example, I'm not trying to lock this in, but you might, let's say the GAP says that no, the policy is that the public policy, and then insert those words above are allowed, and then the process is public comments, and then the decision is, and this is really the question, because you've got to have a policy, whatever that policy is. The policy could be there's no controversial any of those things. So we can ask the GAP to help us word that text. Then there's the process of input to say, I think this presents a problem. But ultimately, someone has to make the decision. And, whether that's a panel or what, I don't know.
Can I make the point again that this should be well drive ground, because other registries that can deal with the same question, that JC or Chuck just told us how the end was .com, if anything goes. or other...
Just saying, in .com.au now. In .com.au, I mean, just to use a bit of historical stuff, we had a policy against obscene words in .com.au.
Yeah.
It just became completely unworkable, and that policy no longer exists.
New Zealand waived their policy as well, a couple of 4 years back.
And so your preference has been eventually gone the other way. They've actually gone towards removing them.
Well, I'm saying they may be destructive.
However, I will say it is a country-by-country decision, and I will note there is a country that I sometimes sit close to, the ITU, who has an interesting idea about the people of information that will not allow these words and is on the record saying so. So the countries may vary in it. We just named some liberal ones.
Yeah, so the point is, whatever problems that you ran into in .com.au, we're going to run into these actually problems at the root level.
Yep. Well, no, I know.
Are we in agreement as a committee that these are public policy issues and we will need GAAP advice in this regard?
Yes.
I still find it a little bit dangerous just to wait for something, you know, to be dropped in the hands of GAAP and then see what comes out. We have a responsibility to come at least up with the evident case. It doesn't have to be an exhaustive list. So we can safely write that religious feelings must not be offended, you know, not deliberately offended, but safely say that should not be racial discrimination implied. There's a couple of illicit things that are fairly evident that can be right. We do not think that all this will address all the public policy issues, but those evident ones will be addressed. At least then there is a sentence that knows that shows to everybody who tries a deal that would be likely to be shut down if they're trying to apply for something like that. Incitation to violence is always something that's pretty evident.
Well, I know that consecutive is an acceptable use policy, so I can just throw up on the list to just give people as an example. But I think what we're saying is we're asking for GAAP advice on this. Ultimately, the board will have to make a decision on what this policy is. And I think what Chuck's saying is I think we just have to be careful that... I'm not sure the Tina Fey is the right group to create this policy, really.
I wanted to say something slightly different on acknowledging that it's public policy and that therefore the GAAP has the... I think my view on it is I don't believe it is public policy, but I do believe that the GAAP will say it is, and therefore we have to deal with that.
It's also helpful to potential applicants to, you know, for them to know that this is probably going to be considered a public policy. You need to realize that when you propose this, these kind of issues like you have listed up there are probably going to be handled through that advisory group.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, well, let's leave that there, and I'll sort of work with Liz on just sort of wording that up as a... In the report, and we will certainly try and formally write a letter to the GAAP, which just sort of encapsulates this, saying this is the area that we're seeking advice on. This is some of the things we've been considering. Okay, so let's just one more thing just before we break for lunch. I just want to close off on one other thing from yesterday, and that was on the topic of the provision of a plan. There was quite a few public comments against that, so sort of thinking that that's getting down the lines of ICANN trying to choose who's got a good business and who hasn't got a good business as opposed to using it as part of selection. What I've done is, what I suggest we do in terms of our report is just adjust that wording to say that the purpose of providing this plan is to provide evidence that you can meet the selection criteria being technical criteria, etc. And also just show an example of, I've lost the link now, but I used a specific example that's used in the registrar accreditation process just to give people a flavour for what ICANN asks for, and then I might just get Kurt to comment on what ICANN does with that information. There's an existing precedent for asking for plans that's used in the registrar accreditation process.
So to be a registrar, you need to sort of demonstrate that you've got the ability to connect to a registry and run DNS and all those sorts of things. It's probably going to be hard to read on the screen, but the sorts of thing is describe your current business capabilities. What management, communication and information processing systems do you have to handle your volume of registrations? What management systems do you have to handle requests for changes and data? How long do you anticipate requests to take to execute? What's your capability to provide a reliable and readily usable daily backup of data? What's your capability for maintaining electronic copies of all transactions? What's your capability for information system security? So these are the sorts of things that are in here. And I just wonder if Kern and Dan could just comment on what do you do with that information and what does your staff see as its purpose?
And the idea is then we look at that to see if it makes sense. In practice, now that we have 700 something registrars, there's like templates basically that people fill out that they know that they've already been the registrars accredited to answer this question in this way, and there are consultants who will help you fill out what the right answers are to not any questions about your application for ranking. So these are questions somebody thought might be a good idea back in 1999. I don't know how helpful they really are today in sorting out shell registrar number 64 versus shell registrar number 128.
The point I'm trying to get to, Dan, is are you suggesting you just don't have this at all? And so you just put some application in and says, yep, tick the box.
Are you suggesting that we change policy on the fly? Or are you suggesting that we open a debate about whether we need that?
Well, we have a policy that we ask us of registrars.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm saying, Madeline, is in our current draft recommendation.
Right.
Our draft recommendation is that we're asking for a plan, and right. The purpose of that plan is to determine whether the entity has the capability to run a TV.
And so, with respect to your answer, which I didn't fully relate to this question, so we can come back to that, the view that we've taken in the business consistency has been that there needs to be a plan. It needs to show a reasonable path that the resources and the planning is there for the registry not to fall over. And so, for instance, if I'm proposing to have 5 million registrations within a 3-month period, there needs to be staff capable of dealing with the registrar community, et cetera, and the plan would sort of lay out but not name the people who are being employed or not.
Well, I think the concept of it was, because I think that's the way I understood the committee's view
right.
of us discussed, but I can see that the way the public's interpreted that is we're trying to say, is this a good business or not? Have you done your market research? How many customers are you going to have? How much money are you going to make?
Because we have operational and we have financial, and I think that there's a certain logic for the operational in terms of not just technical but the structure to handle it, which I think goes to your template of questions. For instance, the financial business plan is something different in terms of what is your marketing strategy, what is your customer strategy, and all of that. And I'm wondering if we divide the two, whether the operational might be acceptable, but the financial is the one, the what is your business marketing plan might be the one that's not so acceptable.
So I think you should be able to use the need of financial resources to do this stuff, to be able to demonstrate that.
But that doesn't necessarily have to include, I don't think, a comprehensive business plan, as this lead-in sentence says, and I suspect that ICANN doesn't even get a comprehensive business plan from registrars. Is that correct?
Well, that's true. But about thinking about the STLD and .NET applications, they require some demonstration of a business plan, and I think those weren't evaluated so much as a guarantee of success, but rather that
an indication to what extent the registry has thought out its business model as an ongoing registry.
I guess what I'm trying to do is identify, I think we need to improve the wording or provide more clarity on what is meant. I think I got the sense that the committee was okay with the concept that there is a plan, and the purpose of that plan is to determine whether the registry operator is capable of operating the registry to the technical standards
and
the worst.
So I'm going to challenge your interpretation about what the public comments said. That's why I was confused.
Oh, I was getting that from...
I knew you. The Dirk said, that Berlin said the criteria are realistic business, financial, technical, and operational plans, and the sound analysis of market needs. Chris Elgar, technical criteria is fine. In the rest of the considerations, I can easily get away from such as policy determinations and business plan reviews. Chris is an individual who's speaking. Mike Blige has a comment as an individual, and the registry constituency has a further elaboration on previous comments. So there are four comments in addition to the comments that have been received before and input from the constituent group. So I didn't consider this a considerable objection. I consider
it. And I've only given you part of it. There is another one. I'm just going to give you the exact one in a second.
Okay.
That's about it.
Okay.
There's a difference, isn't there, between the provision of a plan, which is not a business plan, and that's not unreasonable to demand. You'd expect that to exist anyway. And the requirement of what I can to completely evaluate that plan and challenge it and assume it's only good if it proves to be good. I mean, there's a certain amount that can simply be taken upon trust by the fact that the plan has been written.
Yeah, I guess what Dan's saying is what's happened in the registrar area is that the people have made it up. Because now that the people have done it a number of times, they know what gets through and what doesn't. And they've built templates and they have consultants that will get you on the registrar.
Cool. I mean, that's okay.
And that kind of means that you have been engaged.
Well, no, but that's okay so long as that is linked, and that's the problem that you had in the case of the registrar, so long as it's linked to continuation of accreditation. Now, if it's been gained by the fact that boxes have been ticked and somebody's lying, and they get accreditation, then at some point there should be a challenge mechanism to say, sorry, Sean, no longer applicable, you don't seem to have actually filled what you told you had.
And the reality is, just to delve into it in more detail, is the systems are pretty solid because these so-called light accreditations or shelf companies, the hardware is the real hardware, though. It's not. It's all running on the same hardware. You've got one set of hardware with about 1,000 registrars running on. So it actually meets the technical standards in my sense.
That may be okay too, I'm saying that I think the provision of a plan is still a reasonable thing to request. Massive resources to evaluate it, I think, is unnecessary.
Yeah. So I guess what my objective here, Marilyn, so I was informed by Liz, that there were comments that seemed to indicate that ICANN shouldn't be getting into the area about evaluating businesses, and I was trying to basically get agreement that we clarify that by using examples of the past, whether it's the registry process or the registrar process, rather than go the recommendation out.
Is there any of the public comments and the other papers that have been submitted need to be considered in the context of broader constituency statements, updated constituency statements, general agreement of the group? They are inputs that must be analysed and understood, but the final result that you get to has to reflect the agreement of the group.
So what I'm looking for is just trying to clarify our final policy recommendations to explain what we mean by them, that's all. And I was just saying, let's use some examples of what's been done in the past, but not suggesting some new process. Okay, well, I think that's all on selection criteria. So let's break for lunch. Let's say be back at 1:15, and then we'll talk about allocation methods and stuff. Yeah, can we please stop the recording on the audio screen?